Welcome to Novels with Nightcaps, a podcast where we talk about all things bookish while sipping on some nightcaps. I'm Allie.
And I'm Melinda.
Thanks for joining us tonight. We are going to be discussing some of our recent reads from back in April. So our April book club pick that was for the Edgar Mystery Awards. So Edgar Allan Poe Mystery Awards month. And then May Mental Health Awareness Month. But first, let's find out what we're drinking tonight from our resident bartender and producer. Mr. Producer, what are we drinking tonight?
So tonight we're drinking some Bee's Knees, and let's just say that I was inspired by the Jump the Queue book from last episode for Melinda. Yeah, let's say that. That's so it's totally apropos. Bee's Knees, great little cocktail. If listeners want to drink along, it's just a couple ounces of gin, 3/4 ounces of lemon juice, and 1/2 ounce of honey syrup, which is 2 parts honey, 1 part water, just so you know it mixes better. Really easy, nice little cocktail. It's delicious.
I love anything really that is honey based. So
yes. Very yummy. Makes me, it kind of tastes like that lemon drizzle honey cake that we got from our friend who owns the restaurant downstairs. She's so nice. Shout out to Liberty Public House.
She is a sweetheart and she's fantastic. And yes, it does. It's just very much, it's a very simple cocktail, honey and lemon. If you like honey and lemon, you will like that cocktail. Yes. You could always spruce it up too. You could pop some like lavender in there or some mint in there would be good too. You could, you know, you could do your thing with it.
For gift time.
Yeah.
You're like, no.
All no, I can think no, about now.
Time and lemon go well together. So that would be good. Yeah.
But all I could think about now are the like multiple bakeries that you guys took me to when I visited.
Yes.
No, I just want to go eat snacks.
There are amazing bakeries here in Richmond.
Yeah.
It's especially
fine.
Within like walking distance, which is dangerous.
As long as you actually walk there, I think it's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Burn those calories before you ever even eat them. It's nice.
Yeah. Proper pie, Sabrosa.
Dude, right. Proper pie. They actually opened a very similar store here near me. For any Chicagoans, it's on Clybourne. But I had it for the first time when I was on vacation in Florida, actually. And it's like an Australian
place. I think you told me about this place because I think they actually, their products are sold like in grocery stores.
I think they are now.
Yeah.
But they opened the actual store. Like I'd never heard of it, never seen it when we were on vacation like many years ago. And then now they just opened one here because I was just searching the other day. Because I'm me, so I Googled where to find pie. But and that one popped up, and I was like, "Oh, I know that place!" So I'm very excited because Proper Pie did an amazing hand pie. I always want one, and there's nothing like that here that I've ever gotten to have.
Definitely a unique concept.
I'm very excited about it.
Yay!
I mean, I'll gain 1,000 pounds and have terrible cholesterol, but it'll be fine.
It's okay. All right. So before we get into our first read, be sure to follow us and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on Instagram at Novels with Nightcaps. And we also have a website coming soon.
And merch.
And merch coming soon. So very exciting things in the work. And we will keep you guys in the know, but again, go follow us on social media so you can stay in the loop and find out when those things are happening. Very, very excited about the merch.
Me too.
Especially.
we have so many ideas.
Yeah, I can't wait.
I contributed more than one thing.
I just can't wait to like wear all the cute things. So
I know.
So we are going to start things off tonight, talking about Atomic Love by Jenny Fields. And we were just talking about how this sounds like a pop song, like a Janelle Monáe album.
Okay. So this book, who's it by? Jenny Fields.
Jenny Fields. And does it, was this kind of like, so this is a mystery and, is it a mystery? It's like historical fiction, right?
Yeah, it's historical fiction. It's like a thriller-ish. And it was an add-on on my Goodreads. Not Goodreads. Oh, my God. Book of the Month.
Oh,
yeah, it was a Book of the Month add-on. And so I just picked it. Allie thought it was the month that you thought I was going to pick it. And then I didn't. And then I just went like the next month and added it as an add-on. And it's another cover where you can't see the girl, but she's just standing. It's like her back. Why is that every...
I don't know. I don't like that.
I don't know.
Like every like historical fiction book is just like the back of a woman looking off into the distance.
Anyway, so we would not choose that as one of our favorite covers. The cover was definitely not why I picked this book. But this book is about Rosalind Porter. And she is a physicist on the Manhattan Project. And it's about her passionate love affair with her colleague, Thomas Weaver. And then 5 years after the end of the Manhattan Project and her relationship, it talks about her guilt over the bomb and her heartbreak over Weaver. And that was the shortest synopsis I could find. So first, it's like Hedy Lamarr, kind of, where she's like this beautiful woman who's actually this amazing scientist, but all of the kind of stuff that you run up against when you're a beautiful woman in a male driven, you know, career. And of course then, especially at this time, not a lot of women doing, you know, being physicists and building bombs right. and things of that nature. But I really enjoyed the fact that, it was a real portrayal. Like I felt like her reaction and the way that you follow her life and what she's done since she built since she was part of the project, what's happened to her. And then like the dichotomy between like her and her family and like the difference between her and her sister, and how her sister kind of fits more of the traditional mold. And then here she is trying to live her life and people don't really understand her. And she had gone like straight from being at home to being part of the Manhattan Project. And so she meets this like amazing scientist, you know, male scientist, and she falls for him and everything. And so it's about like once that relationship ends, she kind of spirals and she gets kicked off the project, and she doesn't really know why she gets kicked off the project other than the fact that she's like in severe depression, like doesn't get dressed, doesn't leave the house, doesn't, you know. And then so then she has to come up against like the fact that she loses her job, and then on top of all of that is the compounded guilt of what her project did. Because then it kind of talks about how like she didn't realize how difficult that was going to be to actually see that work happen, and how it wasn't initially built or done to be a weapon. It was supposed to be an energy source or whatever, alternate energy, and then to have it be used to murder tons and tons of people really did not sit well with her. And so everyone in the book actually is battling the past. It's like a huge, the FBI agent, the Thomas Weaver, the sister, the FBI agent's ex-girlfriend, like everybody is like grappling with choices they made in the past. And then that's what moves you through the story. I enjoyed that it didn't end as anticipated, because it's a love story, but it does not end like you think it's going to. But it's still a satisfying ending. You know, because when you go into love stories, you're always like, it's going to be a happy ending. That is what you initially think. But it's happy, but it's not expected. And I liked that. I didn't really feel like it was a thriller. I felt like it moved slowly. And it didn't build like the anticipation of a thriller. You know what I mean? Like, I wanted to know what was going to happen, but it was kind of predictable. So I didn't really, the fact that it's called a thriller, I don't really, it's a love story. Like, I don't know, to me, it wasn't much of a thriller. So don't go into it if you decide to read it with that thought that it's going to be like edge of your seat. But honestly, I probably gave it lots of stars because it takes place in Chicago. It takes place in Chicago, and it was an appropriate, everything was where it was supposed to be. It made sense.
Good.
So I enjoyed that it was.
Shout out to geographic accuracy.
Yeah. And the charm was there. Like, you know, she lives on Lakeshore. She made a lot of money. So she lives in one of those like high rise condos right on Lakeshore Drive. Yeah. It sees the lake, all that kind of stuff. People comment on the view.
Especially like during that time. Yeah.
Yeah. And, but then like her family and like the FBI agent live out in the suburbs. Like they don't live in the city. So you get the whole feeling of Chicago with all of the like surrounding neighborhoods and all that. I guess it's really not a suburb because it's like the way north side. I can't think
like before it was like annexed. Do you mean like the north side of Chicago?
Like Rogers Park area, yeah. Uptown. Yeah. Like
technically that kind of wasn't within like city limits back then.
Yeah. So that's where like family lives.
Right.
So you kind of see the whole, what kind of makes Chicago awesome, which is like you have the really concentrated downtown and then each neighborhood is kind of its own thing.
Yeah. They definitely have each personality each neighborhood in Chicago has its own personality.
Yeah.
Each personality has its own neighborhood. There you go.
Also true. Honestly, also true. Each person with a specific type of personality lives in a specific type of neighborhood in Chicago.
Does that
I feel
make
like
sense?
Oh, that is very true. Yeah.
You follow us.
Oh man. But yeah, so I did enjoy it. I've tried to give myself like I still assign things stars, which is stupid. I should just stop doing that.
Yeah, we're trying to, by the way, we're trying to, I'm glad you said that. Because maybe anyone listening right now, we're trying to come up with like a new rating system that isn't like the 4 or 5 star rating system on Goodreads, like something that's a little more like unique to us.
So yeah.
Any ideas? Let us know.
Because we're tired of trying to assign stars. We don't know what that means. But I did give it lots of stars only because I've been trying lately not to. I mean, I'm critical. I'm always critical. It's not going to change. But I'm trying to just be like, did I enjoy it? Even though I could probably find all these things that maybe didn't line up or maybe were, I want my rating based on specifically just, was it a good time to read it? Yeah.
Yeah. It's difficult because I think like for some people, they reserve like the 5 stars for like, you know, these like perfect literary masterpieces, whereas like 4 stars is, you know, just a book they really enjoyed and then it goes down from there. So it does make it difficult because it's like, what if you really loved like a piece of trash? How do you rank
and
it?
Sometimes we do. Yeah. I mean, honestly, because it's like the emotion that it evokes and how you feel about the book can be totally different. Like you can acknowledge, like I have to tell myself that the people who liked 50 Shades of Grey and really thought that was exceptional literature and they enjoyed it and they were really into it, I feel like that has to just be based on the fact that they had a good feeling when they read it, because it is not well written, doesn't make sense, there are huge plot holes, everything about it is terrible. The main character is, it's distressing how much she's compared to like a child. So I have to just think you can give like an emotional.
Yeah.
Review.
Horny housewives that aren't getting enough.
But there's better trash out there. Let me just tell you, there is better trash. It's better smut. It's more well-written smut out there. Just pick any of that up. Give her any more of your money. And then I learned later, God, this took a turn. It's not relevant at all, but...
It's that title, Atomic Love.
Atomic Love.
Sounds like it should be so much dirtier than it is.
Yeah, well, there's some spice in there. It's like very, it's little, but it's there.
Like open door stuff or?
Yeah, like what they do. Ooh, what happens?
That's the ranking system we should have for romance, like steaminess level. Like, what's the steam?
Yeah,
what's the steam? Is it like sauna level, or is it?
Do hot springs have like a rating system? Because we could just adopt that for romance.
I'm sure they do. Yeah, can probably find some literature from our trip to Iceland way back.
Yeah,
a few years ago.
Oh man. But what I was going to say was that it's 50 Shades of Grey is Twilight fan fiction. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did know that. I forget how I found that out, but it's like one of those weird trivia things that.
I mean, maybe me, because I've complained about it 1,000 times, but.
Yeah, I think when I found it out, I had like that reaction where I was like, what? And I think I like went immediately to you and messaged you and you're like, yes, I do know this. And then. It was just like this WTF moment.
Yeah. I am also appalled. We can be appalled together.
It's just confusing. Like, I don't really understand like how they're related, but. And it's weird too. Cause I think like people were upset. I mean, that kind of makes more sense as to why people were so upset with the author, because if it really was like fan fiction that she just kind of took and like ran with it, that's sort of a little questionable.
Yeah. I would agree. And apparently it's supposed to be, listen, I read the Twilight series. I did read that. I read 3 chapters of 50 Shades of Grey and went, we should burn this. But so I don't remember the 50 Shades of Grey character names at all. I have no idea. But isn't it supposed to be Bella and Edward?
Well, Grey, I mean, Mr. Grey or whatever is the 50 Shades of Grey guy.
But is that Edward's last name? I thought it was supposed
it's
to be
Edward
the vampire.
Cullen, isn't it?
I literally have no idea.
I know that? I haven't even read those books. And I haven't seen the movies either. They just existed during that time.
Because it was everywhere. It was a huge thing. And yeah. I remember a little girl I nannied wanted to read Twilight. And her mom was like, she was like, will you read these and see if it's appropriate? And I was like, it's definitely not appropriate. Like I read them and I was like, no.
Is it really that dirty? Like Twilight?
She's 12. And I didn't think that it was. Okay. Cause there's one book when you get to a certain point. And that's when I was like, no, that's probably, I don't know. She gets pregnant and the baby. Well, and I also was like having a feminist moment where I was like, I just hate this character so much and I wouldn't be
so
like
more
oh
that than like
yeah it's not yeah. It's not steamy to the point where like I don't think like a preteen no
okay
I was just like this is gross like
yeah
she can't survive without a dude like that's not a
yeah
that's I not know. Something I think we should pass on to,
I've heard that criticism about those books
yeah and then when the baby I was like and then it's up to you when it comes to the baby thing where like the baby like eats its way out of her or whatever and it's like a huge it's a whole thing
interesting yeah that was a definite tangent there
that had nothing to do with atomic love atomic love I enjoyed it was okay it was good in the sense
did you answer the question I think I asked about the steaminess level
I said like you see a little bit it's open door ish but it is
okay
appropriate to the time period in that
right
they wouldn't really show you I mean they're not like kinky or anything it's just like pretty normal
that's how we got to 50 Shades of Grey
yeah
that's where your mind went you were like well it's not that but you know
yeah
it's like it's like the sitcoms of the 50s where they had like separate beds
yeah the two twin beds
yeah but they're still getting it on
yeah they yeah. push them together at night it's fine but yes
you gotta love that the two twin beds it cracks me up every time
like how were babies made why are you just pretending like people didn't procreate during that whole period of time nonsense
also like twin beds like for full grown adults like
no 6-foot man is like this is comfortable I'm okay with this
weird
Mm-mm.
I the Manhattan Project was like very specific, I think, to the Midwest, like you were saying about Chicago. Yeah. Like, I think it was only, like it only took place like Michigan, Chicago, I think maybe Tennessee. I don't know. I know like it was very isolated to like kind of like the Great Lakes area though.
Yeah. And they only traveled, according to this book, because I did not research the Manhattan Project as a byproduct of this book. But in it, they travel, but that's for like the testing. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So they go out in the middle of nowhere to kind of test it, but
I don't, I don't necessarily, remember that much about it. And this makes me want to go research it again. I do remember learning about it in school, and my grandpa was actually involved in it.
Oh, wow.
Because he was given, like a pin, a Manhattan Project pin. I don't know who in the family has it now, but I do remember like in, I think it was like junior high or something, like taking that to history class. I
mean, like, yeah, my show grandpa had
this, like, yeah, I was like his Manhattan Project pin. And it was one of those things, like the people involved in it were like proud to be involved in it and didn't really understand like the consequences at the time. Like they didn't know what they
intended it for.
Yeah, exactly. Like it was very much like hush hush. And it was just like a cool thing to be involved in.
Yeah. So the Manhattan Project was centered in Oak Ridge, Tennessee.
Okay.
So that's where the research was done. However, they had additional research happening in various universities. So the University of Chicago was researching how to produce plutonium, as was the University of California, Berkeley, and additional areas. So yes, it was in Tennessee, and then there were some universities providing additional research and support.
Yeah, so, University of Chicago, I know, is a big part of it because they were like professors there, and that's where they studied and did all stuff, which explains a lot about why. So my husband, he's a nerd, and he finds really like funny and cool history stuff. And he actually found a video of from like the 30s, and it was like, come to Chicago, and it's all about how great Chicago is. And then it's like the University of Chicago, it's like the best university in the United States at the time. Like it was a huge deal.
It's still I feel like considered to be a top tier university
for research specifically, right? Isn't it like a top research school? Yeah, definitely.
But in general, like the name carries a lot of prestige.
But so they talk about that too, which, like I said, because I saw a meme the other day that was like, find someone to love you the way that people from Chicago love Chicago. And I'm not even from here, and I feel like I fall into that where I'm like, it's the best city.
Yeah.
Everyone should be here. Like,
there's definitely that like Chicago obsession. But I mean, I think it's like kind of with good reason.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not even going to start this whole debate because it'll be all controversial and shit. But I mean, it's the whole like New York versus Chicago thing. And I'm not from either place, so I can't be biased. I've lived in Chicago. I lived there for about 2 years. I have traveled to New York City many times. I never lived there, though, full transparency. But Chicago is just like a little superior to New York City in a lot of ways. Sorry.
I would have to agree. And I
think again, one of them especially, like, I mean, yeah, I don't know.
I think the reason people are obsessed with Chicago the way they are is because we're like in the middle.
Yeah.
And we're the only thing here, by the way, that's it. And we're in the middle, but we have beaches and we have the lake and we have, I don't know, we just kind of have the best of everything. And then we also have the food.
It's cleaner.
It's cheaper.
There are alleyways to put your garbage in.
Correct.
That's a big, big thing that New York doesn't have. It's really bizarre.
I rarely
throw your trash out in front of your apartment.
We don't have to live in boroughs because it's so big that you have to just keep pushing people further and further. Yeah. Anyway, it's all great. I love New York. I do love to visit there. I could never afford to live there because I work in nonprofit. But my best friend lives there, and she was just talking the other day about how she was like, well, I was like, I don't think I could ever live somewhere again without two bathrooms. Because you know, I have Crohn's disease. It's a whole thing, but I'm like, I don't think I'm I could do that.
It's like, I've earned this at this point in my life. I feel like I deserve 2 bathrooms.
I feel more like my husband deserves 2 bathrooms because he used to be intimately familiar with like the Jewel Osco bathroom, the Walgreens bathroom, because I would be sick and he would be like, I have to pee. So that was our life when we had one. And she was like, well, you could afford 2 bathrooms here. She was like, in Queens, if you gave up a bedroom. So basically she's like, you could have 1 bedroom. It's 2 bathrooms. And she was like, if one of your bathrooms was also in your kitchen, like it was just cracking me up how she just kept having to like expand on how absurd it would be for me to be able to afford 2 bathrooms. But she is New York through and through. Like they are New Yorkers. And we love to go stay with them. It's a lot of fun there, but I still think that living in Chicago is probably the superior.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, we've been watching the new Son of Sam documentary on Netflix, which just, you know, paints New York and not the best of life.
I mean, I will say this, Chicago still is operating as if we're run by mobsters. Like,
yeah,
corruption here is legit. And that was the other thing. They're both Manhattan assistant DAs. And so Margo and Shay are we supposed to use people's real names on podcasts? I don't know. I didn't say their last name. I guess it's fine. But Margo was making a joke too about she could work for the U.S. attorney's office, but not the Chicago like district attorney's office because of the corruption. And I was like, yeah.
Well, now you got her blacklisted.
Margo hates Chicago. Won't be able to work.
Oh man. Producer's telling us to move on to the next book. Okay. All right. Next book, Thursday Murder Club. So that was
the book club pick.
Yes, that was last month's book club pick for the Edgar Allan Poe Mystery Month. And it did not win the award, but I think it was actually the When No One's Watching.
I don't know.
That one? I'm not sure, but I think it's a book that was in the running for last month that did win. But anyway, this I think we discussed this book briefly on a previous episode where we mentioned the author being like a famous comedian, Richard Osman. And this was his first book, and it is part of a series. So I think the second one is already out or is coming out soon. And I think there's also a third one in the works. And also, fun fact, Spielberg. What did I keep saying on the last episode? I kept saying Spielberg.
Just added an S. It's all right.
Oh, Jesus. All right. He bought the rights to this. So apparently there are movie adaptations in the works, apparently. Oh, okay. But anyway, this was a fun read. I don't think our book club has done like a full-on mystery.
No.
Like this, like a murder mystery. So it's definitely different for us. And it was kind of like a cozy mystery in a way. Which I will, let's see if I can pull up the old description here.
While you're looking for the description,
I got it already.
Okay,
go ahead.
This year's Edgar's, the winner was a book called The Dejean Patrol on the Purple Line. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that word right. Dejean.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember. But then also that other one I mentioned won like best paperback, I think.
What did you mention?
I think it's called When No One's Watching.
Well, yes, When No One's Watching by Elisa Cole won Best Original Paperback. And the other award they give out, or a couple more, Best First Novel was a book called Please See Us. And Best Factual Crime was Death in Mudlick, a coal country fight against the drug companies that delivered the opioid epidemic.
What?
That's the whole title.
quite a title. That's like
actually there's even more awards. I'm gonna stop there. There's a lot of awards they give out.
Yeah, there were a lot of categories.
And the sequel to Thursday Murder Club is due out in September of this year.
And I pre-ordered it. So I'll let y'all know how that goes.
Yay. I'm excited. All right. Okay, cool. So synopsis for Thursday Murder Club. It is about, so it takes place in a retirement community. And these are four friends who come together within the retirement community. They meet weekly in the jigsaw room to discuss unsolved crimes. And together they call themselves the Thursday Murder Club. So it's Elizabeth, Joyce, Ibrahim, and Ron. And they're all about pushing 80 years old, but they still have some tricks up their sleeves. And when a local developer, so real estate developer, is found dead with a mysterious photograph left next to his body, the Thursday Murder Club suddenly finds themselves in the middle of their first live case. As bodies begin to pile up, our unorthodox but brilliant gang is basically on the case, and we are with them along the way to see if they can catch the killer before it's too late. Yep.
Okay. I just feel like all of the Goodreads, or however we find the synopsis, they're always like way too long, and I never know when they're going to end. And I'm like, okay, are we still going and talking?
Yeah, no, that was it.
Okay. I loved it. It was like Mrs. Marple. It was just a bunch of Mrs. Marples just hanging out, solving crimes. So I really enjoyed it. I think our book club was a pretty solid win across the board.
Yeah, I think so too. I think everybody enjoyed it for the most part. Like, it was really fun.
I only had one thing that was like off to me. Not off, but like, I didn't know if it was really something that could happen as frequently as it happened, was that because they're all old, they live in this retirement home, they've kind of already lived full lives. So whenever somebody is maybe found guilty of something, they were just like off themselves.
Yeah.
And there was like
a lot of suicide in this book. Trigger warning, I guess.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, they're all elderly and they're kind of just like, I've lived my life. Like,
not going to prison. Yeah. Just end it here kind of thing. So that was bizarre to me. I did like the ensemble cast. And I liked that there's the one woman, Joyce, who has like her own chapters where she's like writing in her diary or whatever.
Yeah.
I really thought, I don't want to spoil it, but I really thought certain things about her. But I did like how she broke up, like her letters break up who the point of view is going to be from. So like when he switched chapters, I really liked that about her little letters. And then she was completely unreliable, but she was very, very cute. Like her responses to things and her, when she learns to use her phone, she's very excited. When she goes to a vegan restaurant, she's very excited. Like, I just found her to be adorable.
Yeah. It was, that was one thing we talked about doing book club. Like the author kind of based the characters of Joyce and Elizabeth like loosely on his mother. So I think he talked about like how, and I may have to have our producer jump in to correct me here, but I think he talks about his mother is a school teacher or something, or a nurse. And he based, okay, I can see producers jumping in here. Am I right?
So a school teacher. Yeah, you're right.
Okay. So a school teacher. So basically the characters were kind of supposed to show like the contrast between class, like in England, and especially how that affects women. So he always viewed his mother as extremely intelligent and capable of really big things. But because of economic class, she didn't necessarily have access or like the opportunities to do big things. And you see that in this book between Elizabeth and Joyce, because they're both very smart, capable women, but come from very different circumstances and backgrounds, where it places Elizabeth in like more of this position of authority, whereas Joyce is more of kind of like the wallflower. She's very observant, but she takes more of like a back seat, which kind of makes sense why she is the narrator and you're getting everything from her point of view through her journal, versus like Elizabeth, who's more like in the action. She's like more of the leader.
Yeah. And everybody in the book club was like, I want to be Elizabeth. And really, like, not everyone, but like a lot of people were like, oh, Elizabeth, and how cool to be her. Because we don't know what she is, but I think she was a
spy or something.
Yeah, something.
Yeah, definitely worked in like criminal investigation of some kind, because she's very skilled at like interviewing and researching. And
she has like all these contacts.
Really connect. Yeah, well connected.
Yeah. Yeah. So she was something special, but I was like, I love Joyce. Joyce is like, let me bake you this cake. Mm-hmm. And also my sweetness will convince these people to do these certain things that we want them to do. Like, she's just so genuinely sweet and like, I don't know. I loved her, and probably because of the baking aspect.
See, I told you wanted to talk about, I told the producer he would want to talk about this book, and he's like, no, I don't want to, but he just turned his camera back on.
I just wanted to mention, I thought if your listeners do want to check out this book, I think, whether they listen to the audiobook or not, at the end of the audiobook, there's an interview.
Yeah,
with
that's
him.
A good point.
Another mystery author interviews him about the book, and it's a really great interview, and gives a lot of insight into the characters, how he wrote it, etc. This is his first novel. Mm-hmm. He's a television writer typically in the UK, and so it was just really interesting. And he's a middle-aged man, so
that's what I was referencing with the whole about his mom. That's how I found that out, was from the interview.
Yeah. And it was, he basically said he didn't directly base any character off of a woman he knows, but he used all the women who raised him, which he said he was essentially raised by women, mm-hmm. his grandmother and his mother, to inform the various female characters in the book. And there was definitely elements of that in the class system piece, where Joyce was from a working class background, but because her daughter was so successful, she's now able to live a lifestyle of a more upper class person, and he relates to that. Yeah, so his mom was a teacher, so very working class, but he's been a successful, you know, TV personality and writer, and so now him and his mom can live a more upper class. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not aristocrats; they weren't born into it, which is still a thing in the UK. But they've worked their way up into a upper class lifestyle, and yeah, it was a great interview. So, you know, if your listeners want to check out that audiobook, it does have a great interview at the end.
Yeah,
with the author.
I think he had mentioned. I'm glad you clarified on that, because I think now that I'm thinking back to that interview, it's been a while since you wrote this book. In the interview at the end of the audiobook, he said that a lot of people asked him if Elizabeth was actually based on his mother, because people thought Elizabeth was really similar to his mother. And that's why he brought up that point. I think that was interesting, that neither of them were really based on her. It was just kind of, and especially since Elizabeth's background is very different from his mother's background, but her personality influenced that character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I listened to the audio, and then I can read faster than I can.
She was a great narrator, though, by the way.
She was. It was wonderful to listen to, and I really enjoyed it. But then I got really impatient, and so I just read the end of it. Yeah. And so I love Agatha Christie. I think she's great. And I'm always looking for like more of that type of thing, because I don't know if this qualifies as cozy. I don't know if I've read a cozy novel. I don't understand what that is. I don't know.
We also had that discussion during book club, because I think we had at least like one member there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who's a cozy mystery reader. And we asked her opinion on that, because I don't think any of us really are that that into, like, I don't really read mysteries that much. So yeah, she was like, no, not really. Like,
yeah. Because I love mysteries, but I don't think I've ever read anything that was considered a cozy mystery necessarily.
Yeah.
I think my sister has, because I think the Jenna Fluke, I think is her name. And I only know because about my sister, the cookbook. So it's these like mysteries, and each one is named after like a baked good, because it's the amateur sleuth.
That's the thing too with cozy mysteries, is like it has to have some kind of food pun in the title. And there has to be a cat somewhere on the cover. Those are the rules.
And my sister like blows through those, and they all have recipes at the end. And so then she'll make whatever was in the book. And so I think I've read like two of those. So that probably counts as a cozy mystery. But I thought this was more Agatha Christie, you know, a Georgette Heyer type historical mystery. And I really was intrigued by his writing. Like, I really liked the fact that he was pretty honest in like his observations. Like, he did a great job of his characters perceiving certain things very different ways. Like perceiving people different ways. And the example that I think I gave him in book club is that there's a character, like a daughter of someone where the developer wants to buy their property, and when the developer is seeing the daughter, he's like, she's frumpy, she's old, she's this terrible, whatever. But then the cop sees her and he's like, that attractive woman on the hill. Like, and just the way that they perceived her was so different. And of course, Ian, the developer, she wasn't 20. And so that was her downfall. Like, he couldn't understand it. But, and so I really appreciated the writing in this. I thought he did a great job of, making his characters like real people, aside from the excessive murder, like offing yourself thing. From that, I thought this was very, he did a great job with his characters and like, that kind of thing. So
I think it's difficult to like write that many characters, especially for like your first book. Like, that's pretty ambitious to be like, yeah, I'm going to write in this many characters and give them all their own personality
and backstory and like everything. Yeah.
That's a lot.
And I did think like when I read the end of this book, I was like, I think this is going to be a series. And that was before I knew that it was coming to be a series. But there's a character named Bogdan. And when you read this book, I don't care what you say, I love him so much. And I want him to just forever be in all of the, like, I want him to somehow get maybe be a bigger
definitely
character.
Definitely in the second one.
Okay. I love him so much.
I think confirmed that somehow.
Yeah. But Bogdan and Steven, I was like in love with them. Like, I want to know them in real life. I love them so much.
I think it was actually in that author interview. I think she really loved him and asked if he would be in the second book. And I think he pretty much confirmed that. So
that's probably why I pre-ordered the second one, because you guys are the ones that told me that it was going to be a continuing series. But
he confirmed that Bogdan is going to have an even bigger role in the second book.
I'm very excited about it.
Yeah.
But I do think it's an enjoyable read, and it's not heavy. It's heavy. Some of it's sad, but like, it's just a good mystery.
It's funny. Read. Like, yeah. I feel like one of the things that I really liked, again, going back to reference that interview again, they talk about how, so like he's traditionally like a comedy writer, and going into this, the other author was asking, why did he choose to write mystery? I don't remember exactly what all of his reasons were. He had some background, like attachment to mysteries. Either he enjoyed reading them or had like a previous career in that. I'm not really sure, but he basically said he never wanted to set out to write like a comedy. And even with writing this, he did not want to write jokes. And I think he really pulled off the subtle comedy in this, like the situational comedy, because it's really just the situations that the people get themselves into, and the characters themselves that are funny. You don't have to write in jokes. And so I really did appreciate that he discusses like how, you know, his whole philosophy behind that and his approach to writing. I thought that was really interesting from like, you know,
I agree.
That perspective. Yeah.
So we would recommend this.
Yeah, there's a lot of murders to keep track of. but once you get it sorted out at the end, like I did have to like think about it for a second. I'm like, were there three murders? Four murders? Like, had to like list them all out.
How many dead people are there? Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot. but yeah, I feel like it's hard to talk about a mystery without really giving spoiling too it. Much away. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think in total there is three, right?
Three,
yeah.
I think
and
so.
And they're all fairly different. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was honestly
one was really like kind of out of left lane. You're like, whoa, yep. Not expecting yeah. that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I enjoyed it.
If I could chime in one last time here.
Go for it.
There actually, I believe, were six murders total, but that includes past murders that they reference that do yeah. apply to what happens to people later on. So yeah. all in, there are six murders, I believe, if I'm counting correctly, referenced, and a couple suicides.
Right.
There is a pretty big, you know, not to sound insensitive here, I mean, they're fictional characters, so I guess it's not insensitive. There's a large body count in this book.
Yeah, there is.
For it being yeah. such a light, it's a light, fun, humorous, enjoyable, great read, but yet there's like a massive body count.
Yeah, don't be turned off by the body count.
Yeah, it's definitely a good read. It's definitely fun and much more upbeat than you would like.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Mr. Producer said, I gotta stop calling you by your name, right? You're just Mr. Producer.
I'm going to bleep it out. Don't worry.
So no one knows your identity.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, it is a light, fun, enjoyable read. It happens to be heavy on the murder. So
yes. A good way of summarizing it. All right. And with that, I think it is break time.
Break. Okay, so we're back. We'll talk about The Midnight Library by, what is his last name?
Pig?
Yes. And I gotta remember authors. I gotta be better about this, the authors' names. They're important. But this was one that fell into the mental health awareness. And so this book is about Nora, and she's a 30-something woman who is regretful about her life and feels alienated and unneeded in the world. In the depths of her wallowing, she comes across the Midnight Library. In it, each book represents a portal into another variation of what her life could have been. So I freaking love this book. I love An Ordinary Life. Like I loved the fact, I love the entire idea of this book. I love the lesson of this book. If I wrote a manifesto and was like, this is what I believe about life, it would probably be this book on some level. Like, he just went ahead and wrote it for me. And are you choking? Are you all right?
Oh my God. Okay.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Like whatever the meme was that I sent you today.
Yes.
That was like, I swear I've been vaccinated. I was coughing because I swallowed my spit wrong or something.
They'll forever remind me of Yes Ty when we went to dinner.
Oh my gosh. That was so good. I mean, it was awful, but good. It was so funny.
Oh man, I just coughed uncontrollably and the guy next to us was like, are you okay? Is she okay? I was like, just choked out my spit. Fine.
I looked so insensitive because I didn't go to the bathroom to like check on you, like as if you were dying in there. And I'm like, she's fine. It's fine.
Allie's like, I know what's happening.
Believe me. He's like, yeah. I don't know. It sounds like she's choking into.
Nope. This is just why we don't go out in public. Oh my God. Gosh.
Okay. Can't take us anywhere, I swear.
Makes anyway, for a good life, story though.
Life manifesto.
Yes. So I don't always succeed, obviously. But I try to live where I try not to think about what could have happened. Like I try not to get stuck on the, yeah, what my life could have been, or compare myself to other people very much. Just because I think in that way lies peril. Like you'll just,
yeah, it's unhealthy. Become,
yeah.
Yeah.
So I just really love the idea of this book. She is depressed. She doesn't like where her life is at. And so she ends up in this midnight library. And of course I am all for, if the between life and death is a library, fine. I'll hang out there. That's good.
I hope that is like the purgatory that we get to hang out in. I'm not Catholic, but if I were, I guess.
If that's the level I'm stuck at, it's fine. Yes. But so I really enjoyed, like, she would pick the books and then she would have this life. And then if she sticks in the life, it's because that really is like the fulfillment, right? That is what makes her feel better and be better. And the woman who runs her like library was her elementary school librarian.
That's adorable.
And so, yeah. And so it's like this nod to how important those people in your life are, like who influence you. Yeah. And then another character,
my elementary school librarian.
Oh my gosh. I wanted to spend all my time there. And it was the first time I ever won anything in my life.
I think mine was related to me somehow. It was this really small town.
Yeah. That makes perfect sense.
But it was also just like, yeah, I loved the library. And yeah, I remember like when I loved the librarians enjoyed asking me what I wanted to be when I grew up, because I would always say librarian.
Yeah.
They're like, and, oh, it's so cute.
I love this little girl. But and the enjoyment that they got out of like recommending books to you was, you could just, it's like palpable, just complete joy in their job. Like they were always awesome. And then of course now it's evolved into this, like, they're like important researchers and like, they have all of those skills.
I think it's also kind of viewed as like, you know, it's one of those like underappreciated jobs, like teachers and librarians, like even though they have this massive influence on the lives of others, like, I mean, you ask any adult like who their favorite teacher was, or, you know, to remember their librarian from school, like everyone remembers these things. Like those people have like a tremendous impact on your life. So like, I think like, even though it's one of those jobs that may not like seem like super impressive, you know, on paper, like it's really one of the few jobs where you can have like such an influence on the lives of other people.
And I remember being in, the reason I have lit degrees and not a degree to be a librarian is because at the time when I was in school was that weird, when I was in college was that weird in between time where people really thought libraries weren't gonna be a thing, and they were like, you're not gonna be able to get a job. And now here we are,
the jobs evolved to kind of suit
it's evolved
technology today, instead of just dying out. But I mean, that was a valid like concern, because I mean, journalism schools started to close, like, both Melinda and I went to Indiana University. Like the journalism school basically converted into a media school.
It is,
because print journalism is going away.
And it's, and the thing with the library, though, is like, you can get everything there. Like everything you need is there. If you're a person, like, I don't know, to me, it's one of the services, the social services that is the most important and impactful. You can go there and learn things for free. Like you can go to seminars, you can get skills, you can do all these things.
You can get a job.
You can get a job. They help you write resumes. You.
Yeah.
They help you do, you know, librarians are magic. They're magical.
Yeah. And I think the social, like you're saying, the social work that they do, a lot of times people don't think about that, but like they're providing a lot of social services that kind of fill in some gaps, to be honest, that for like jobs that don't necessarily exist. Like it's, and I think it's kind of good and bad, because I think there are a lot of people who go into that field that aren't necessarily like mentally prepared to handle those things. But I think we're getting to the point now that if you get a degree in that field, they really like try to make sure that you are equipped with everything you need to be able to handle those kind of situations, like dealing with homelessness. And
well, during the pandemic, they were like one of the only places open. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause people still have to have access to something, like, you know, and it was, and aside from just the books too, but like the research part of it, of course, I'm an advocate for it. I believe that if you can read a book and it can change your whole life, it can change your whole view of the way you see things, it can alter you as a person. And I really do believe that. And so librarians hand you that, like they're influencing society. They're influencing personal belief systems. They're influencing mental health. They're influencing, like, they're just phenomenal people. And then there's also the research part that's like, you know, if you're writing your thesis and you go to the library and you're like, I have to write about this. And then they're like, okay. And then there's this huge resource system where they can just pull all this stuff for you. And they just know. And, and they know how, you know, peer reviewed, like legit research materials and not just like some shit that you Googled real quick.
And I remember like back in, I think it was middle school, is back when like Google was kind of taking off. Trying to remember what age I was when Google kind of became a thing, because there were competitors back then. Still, there were like Bing, and there was like Ask Jeeves.
That was like high school for me, I think. So yeah, probably your middle school.
And there was one, somebody reminded me of this the other day. And I was like, whoa, blast from the past. Cause like I had totally forgotten it existed. And then they brought it up and I was like, oh my God, I remember like being at the mall and calling that number to get like movie showtimes and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, what was that? It was like,
I don't know the name of it, but we would call to get the weather.
Yeah.
We call to get movie times.
Because you couldn't Google things from your phone. Like we didn't have smartphones. Like they were just phones. So like you, Canva, Kaka, what is Kaka? Cha-cha.
Yes. So glad you got there, but you said Kaka before you got there.
Everyone laughed at the Kaka joke. No. Anyway, Cha-cha. Yes. I remember calling it, because that was like the new operator.
Yeah.
It was. You didn't dial zero, you like called Cha-cha and could ask them like any random question. And
Yes, and they would tell you anything.
Yeah. And so I remember like our librarians teaching us about like how to use these search engines. And at the time I was kind of like, this is like, why do they have to teach us how to use a search engine? Like their job is going to be obsolete in a few years. Cause I was, you know, like a punk kid. And
this is how we were different.
Yeah. And then like, I was going through like my rebellious phase in junior high, but then I got to, got to my career like later in life, like when I started doing fundraising, like research, and I got kind of thrown back into the world of libraries and research. And I remember going to this foundation specifically like in downtown Chicago that helps fundraisers and nonprofits like find donors and grants and that sort of thing. And it was like a whole thing that if like you didn't really understand how to search for those things, like I'm sure you could figure it out like on your own, but it would take a very long time. Yeah. And they had resources that like you wouldn't have access to like at home, and they had all the subscriptions, and they were like very, well-versed in like knowing how to kind of like most efficiently search for things so that you didn't end up wasting a bunch of time. So
yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And so if that's who shows up to help you in the afterlife, like it's pretty solid. But I loved that. And I loved that they kind of played on the fact that people in your life who you think play a minor role to some extent, but you remember even into your adulthood, like end up being, they've actually had like a huge impact on your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just really loved the whole thing. And I loved the flashbacks, and I loved like her ultimately the way it ends. I enjoyed, like I was into it. I was like, I love this. Because I do, I love An Ordinary Life. I love when people go through this finding themselves stage where they come to terms with that, what the way your life is fine. And,
right.
And it's a good thing. And the fact that you are alive is a great thing. And so I like thoroughly enjoyed it. But
I definitely need to read this book.
Yeah, it's just, it is delightful. My only criticism, before I get to the criticism though. So the other thing, which again, with the nostalgia for us elder millennials, one of the dudes, his like person is a video store. And so he's like, puts movies like in the VCR. Yes, it's a Blockbuster. And I was like, they don't call that's it a Blockbuster, awesome. But it's a Blockbuster or Family yeah. Video or whatever was happening in your time. But I was like, okay, that's also very nostalgic and like wonderful.
Love like, that.
Yeah.
No wonder like the IU Alumni Association decided to read this for book club.
Oh.
Because I got like an email sense. Notification that was like, this is what I think it was last month. This is what yeah. they read.
Well, if you've ever been to the Lilly Library at IU, I'm just saying. It's pretty one magical. Of the best experiences ever. and so, I mean, you see authors from like Ernest Hemingway's like handwritten notes they have there. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that is the library that my grandmother used to take me to when I was a kid.
Probably.
It was
where
amazing.
You grew up, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I was so lucky to grow up there.
Yeah. Whereas I was just like hanging out there like a nerd during my undergrad. But the only complaint I had is that she's in this library, she pulls the books, goes into these alternate lives. And they didn't spend a whole lot of time on the like I really it's not a big book. It's a short book. And so I really thought it could have been expanded upon. So that you get more invested in why she doesn't or does stay wherever she is. And like the choices that she makes. I really did think that they could have gone into that a little bit more and it was more than one writer. But I did think that was my one criticism. It was like it was a little light on the, you know, in and out thing. But ultimately it's just a delightful read. And again, like I said, that was my one criticism. And I'm trying to rate things on whether or not I just enjoyed myself while I was reading it. And it didn't take long to read at all. It was a fast read. So
yeah, I think you rated this like 5 stars, didn't you? Full 5 stars.
4 or 5. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think the other books that this author, I haven't read anything by Matt Haig, but like there are other books, that he's written that I also have on my TBR because a lot of them look really interesting.
Yeah. I've never read anything else by him, but I really
like How to
it.
Stop Time. Like that one looks good. The Humans. I think that one. Oh, is yeah. Also on my TBR. Yeah.
Yeah. But so definitely pick it up. I lent mine to my mom and then I was like, you can't have it though. Like I need to have it back. Yeah, Cause I really like the cover of it too.
Yeah, it is a good cover.
Yeah.
I think all of his books have pretty good covers. I think that's what attracted me at first were the covers. They sucked me in. I'm a sucker for a good cover.
We really are. Oh man. But yeah, so that was it. I would recommend that one definitely.
Yeah, I'm definitely gonna read that one. All right, I think it is game time.
Game time.
Game time, Mr. Producer.
Game time.
What do you have for us today?
All right. We've got a fun one. I foresee this being my favorite game.
All right.
Going forward. So you guys need to put on your casting director hats because we're going to cast the movie.
Oh God. You know, both of us are pretty terrible with names, right?
It's okay. I'm going to give you one guess as to which book we're going to cast the movie for from this episode.
Oh,
is it going to be the Thursday Murder Club?
Of course it is. Of course it is.
The only one that both of us read.
Yes. Okay. So I'm going to give you the characters that we're going to cast and you guys can take a little bit of time and decide who you think should be cast. And I'm going to give a little background on the character to remind you. So we're going to cast 5 characters.
Okay.
It's the 4 people from the Thursday Murder Club and Bogdan. So the four individuals from the club are Elizabeth, who is kind of the elder stateswoman of the community. We think she was probably in like MI6 or whatever right. It is. Like she's totally a spy. Upper class, gets shit done. Joyce, who you guys talked about a lot already, so I won't get much into it, but pretty, you know, standard. She was a nurse. And she's kind of in over her head, but loves it. Ibrahim, who is also kind of an aristocrat, he was a psychiatrist. I don't know that we know where he was from, but I think they say
Egyptian, don't they?
Okay.
I think he's
that sounds right. Okay. And he's very intelligent, right? He's a psychiatrist. Right. That's kind of his role in the club. And then Ron, who is kind of that working class, you know, his son's a famous boxer. He used to be a union leader, very blue collar kind of a guy, but still cares about everybody.
Right.
And then Bogdan, who is a Polish immigrant, and it's kind of a handyman, get things done, but you know, everybody's favorite,
right?
For his personality. So those are the five characters we're going to cast as a, you know, just so your listeners know, Steven Spielberg's company, Amblin Entertainment, has already purchased the rights to this.
You just said it the way that I said it.
What?
I kept met
Spielberg.
No,
Did you add the S word, Spielberg?
Whatever.
I hope you did. Honestly, I hope it's just a dear family trait.
Yes.
I hope it is too. Spielberg or Spielsberg, either way. No matter how you pronounce his name, he's cashed it out. He's throwing the cash at this thing.
Can I make a request?
Sure.
Can you tell us like which character you want us to cast? Like you tell us, you go through them, because that's a lot for me to remember.
Yeah, tell us one at a time.
Yeah, one at a time. Okay. So then like we can focus. Yeah, just focus on one thing.
Well, let's just go in order then. Okay. Let's start with Elizabeth.
Okay.
We'll cast Elizabeth first.
Okay. Elizabeth, I think I would cast Judi Dench.
I would do Helen Mirren. I knew her like...
Ooh, that's a good one too, actually. Yeah.
Either
Helen,
one.
Helen okay. Mirren's maybe a you little guys... bit more appropriate because I think she's a little younger than Judi Dench.
Oh, yeah. Maybe.
Okay. So you two are co-casting directors, which means you have to come to consensus on each character.
Oh,
so
okay. Well,
it sounds like Helen Mirren. Though,
yeah, I would go with Helen Mirren.
For Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was quick. So we've got Helen Mirren on board. It's exciting for her. All right, what about Joyce?
Oh, God.
I think I would go with this actress's name is Celia Emery. And she was in the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel.
Oh, yes. Yes, I know who you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I love her.
I think she has that personality.
Yes, I agree.
All right. That was quick. Celia Emery. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I know her. I could totally see that. Yeah. See, that's a great casting choice right there. It's funny because when I was reading this, I was actually picturing Judi Dench as Joyce, although I don't think personality wise that makes any sense, but just visually, like,
I can see that. Yeah.
I think it was the narrator's voice did that too. Cause the narrator kind of sounded like her.
Yeah.
So it almost made you picture every character as Judi Dench.
Because she is the only, she's the only character we get a first person view from because we hear her diary entries. So that might make sense.
Right.
Okay. Ibrahim,
this is going to be hard because this would have to be an Egyptian actor. And I am not sure that I can think of an Egyptian actor of that age off the top of my head. Let's see. I don't know. He died in 2015.
Yeah, that's what I was getting ready to say. I'm like, who?
Omar Sharif.
Oh, I was getting ready to say, we're both going to say this, which is
a Lawrence of Arabia guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. He died apparently.
So I have a pick, but I'm going to save it because that's not part of the game. But I do think, you know, don't obviously it'd be great if they were Egyptian, but it doesn't necessarily have to be.
All of these actors are too young.
Yeah, that's my problem.
Where are the older Mediterranean actors? Maybe I need to start thinking in the direction of like Guy Ritchie movies.
Yeah.
Those have some older actors. Oh, that's a good pick. Guy from Monk. Why can't I think of his name?
Oh, Tony Shalhoub.
Would he be old enough? I think.
I think, but
I mean, he's kind of on the cusp. He's probably like
Tony Shalhoub is exactly who I was thinking of.
How old is Tony Shalhoub?
He's 67.
He's 67.
Hmm. Okay, so he's a little a little young, but yeah, you could age him up. You could make his hair a little bit more gray.
Yes, you could age him up a few years.
That would be great, actually. I think he is. I'm not sure if he has Egyptian roots, but he definitely has Mediterranean roots.
His beard is already gray. Here's some more current photos of him.
Yes, he's got. I love him and Mrs. Awesome. Maisel so much.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Okay, so we've got Helen Mirren, Celia Emery,
Lebanese.
And Tony Shalhoub
yeah,
so far.
Yeah, he's Lebanese.
Oh, he's yeah. Okay, so Ron.
Ron is the blue collar guy, right?
Yeah, I'm personally picturing somebody from like a Guy Ritchie movie.
Oh, I actually think Tim Roth.
Tim Roth.
He's got that like neurotic, like.
Oh, I could definitely
activist.
See that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could see that for sure.
He's a little young,
is
but if you want to age him up.
61. 60. So he's.
Oh.
He's 60. Mm.
Okay. So he might be a little young. Yeah. But what about Brendan Gleeson?
Brendan Gleeson.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. From like. In Bruges.
Yep. I don't know though. He's like a things. Little like he's a little too rough, don't you think? I don't think he has that teddy bear thing going on.
You don't think so?
I don't know, because I don't remember him having a soft side in anything.
I also have my pick for this, but I don't want to interfere. Although I will say this guy's not British, but you know, get him to do a British accent.
He's Irish though. Oh, your guy?
Oh, my guy. Okay. Yeah. My guy's 82. So perfect.
That's a solid.
Just for time's sake, I'm going to throw him out there. You guys can say if you agree or disagree, but I feel like Harvey Keitel would be awesome.
Yeah.
Oh,
I could
like
see Harvey
Keitel. Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe.
He just seems like the kind of guy who would have like a tough guy kid.
Yeah.
Too. You
yeah.
know, like he raised
the boxer,
tough guy.
Yeah.
The
what about the guy from Hook? Smee from Hook. Bob Hoskins.
Is he still alive?
I don't know. Wasn't he Smee in Hook? Did I make that up?
He passed away in 2014.
Gosh dang it! I got nothing. We can't for some reason cast Ron.
There are plenty of older British men. That could totally play this role.
Mm, yeah. What about? Oh, geez. I'm sure there's a Skarsgård that could probably play it. Although I was reserving the Skarsgård for the Polish guy.
Yeah. Okay. So what about the guy? I like how I don't know anybody's name. What about the guy from Moulin Rouge?
Oh.
I just made a joke about him earlier to you, Allie. Like it's all going so well. Like.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. What is that guy's name? What about Jim Broadbent? That might be too soft though. Like he from Harry Potter, like he's like the that professor. I can't.
Which professor?
Slughorn, right?
Slughorn.
That's the same guy, right?
Is that the guy from Moulin Rouge?
That's the Moulin Rouge guy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, it is. You're right.
Okay. Look at us.
Is. That is the same guy. We align.
I was going to suggest John Hurt.
Okay. John Hurt.
Oh.
But if you guys want to go with
John Hurt is a solid, that's a solid choice. But I think.
If you guys like Jim Broadbent better.
I think so.
You guys. Okay. So Jim Broadbent is who you're casting for Ron. And then Bogdan.
Ugh.
Oh gosh,
it's gonna be hard. It's gonna have to be like a Skarsgård.
I don't know that you're allowed to make a movie anymore without one. So I think it's part of the
what
like the
age
Screen
is
Actors
Bogdan
Guild.
Supposed to be? They don't really. I mean, I know he would be the age of like their kids, right? So he would probably
Ron.
Be like in his 30s or 40s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's Ron's contemporary, right? Not sorry, Ron's son. His contemporary.
Wait, what?
Aren't
yeah,
they
age wise? age wise.
Ron's son, the boxer, and then Bobby Banner, the same age.
Yeah.
Okay. So
roughly.
It needs to be, well, let me just see, like, Skarsgård. How old is this one? How old is Alexander? 44. I don't even recognize him from anything. Alexander Skarsgård. Bill Skarsgård's going to be too young because that's the it guy. He's like going to be in his 20s, early 30s, maybe.
I do not know Alexander. I've never seen him before.
I haven't. I don't think I've seen him in anything.
Alexander Skarsgård.
He's the one that's in his 40s, but I don't recognize him from anything. His IMDb photo is of him with a suit jacket on and no pants. FYI for everybody.
The only Skarsgård I'm familiar with is Stellan, and he's too old.
Well, the biggest one is, Stellan, from Good Will Hunting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bill, I think, is going to be too young. Is that it? There's more of them, right?
Well, Peter.
Bill, Gustav, Stellan, Voltaire, Isha. Yeah, there's a bunch of them.
God, there's so many. Voltaire.
A lot of these look young. That Voltaire guy is like way young, 95.
I don't know why you're going right for a Skarsgård. I mean, you're welcome to, but.
Because I don't know of any Polish actors off the top of my head.
There aren't. I just looked. I don't recognize a single Polish actor. So that's fair.
I'm not really sure. Like, I mean.
Here's the problem with Bogdan is people love his character so much. I feel like the actor has to even visually have that kind of like rough around the edges, but like you could love him just by looking at him.
Yeah. He has to be beloved, but like rough. Yeah, exactly that. He can't be too clean cut. And I think the Skarsgård dude is a little too.
I think this is where you got to go back to get Richie.
I will say, as you guys look, I remember when Allie told me that, I think it was Allie, whoever told me, I think it was Allie, said that Spielberg had already bought the rights to this. Although he might not direct, he might just produce. But I really wanted Guy Ritchie to direct this because I was reading this, I was like, this is like Guy Ritchie meets the Golden Girls.
Yeah.
And I'm so here for that mashup of a vibe in a movie or a television show. Like, give me Guy Ritchie, Golden Girls.
That makes sense.
Hmm.
I want to cast Idris Elba just because I want Idris Elba to be in everything. So he could be Bogdan.
Dang.
It's a tough one, isn't it?
Tough because I feel like it's got to be like,
I feel like Guy Ritchie could play it himself. Have you like look up Guy Ritchie? I mean, he's acted.
You know what I think of? I almost think of, remember like the scary gangster guy like in Black Books? I feel like it kind of needs to be something along those lines. Yeah, like the big guy who's kind of dumb. Oh. Like I feel like somebody like that would make sense because it's like you feel you have sympathy for them because like he couldn't read. But he's also really big. That made me
think of Lenny. That made me think of the guy from the really big bald guy from Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. But ooh, he's dead. Guy? So,
Why do I feel like Nicholas Pinnock could play it?
Who's that?
Well, I only know him from Captain America, but Pinnock.
I'm so confused.
I'm going outside the box here and just getting that vibe of kind of rough around the edges, but lovable.
Oh, I might have given you guys just such a hard challenge here.
You did, because there's like a million characters in this book.
I only gave you 5.
This is literally the only one we've struggled with. The rest we were like pretty spot on.
I just keep looking at Guy Ritchie and thinking like, hey, you look like Bogdan to me.
You think it could be Tom Hardy or is he too good looking?
Honestly, I would make Tom Hardy anyone. So, I mean, he's right up there with Idris Elba. They could just be in everything. I'd be like, yes, that's fine.
I feel like Tom Hardy would, I mean, it makes sense.
It does. I don't know that he's like goofy enough, but
if you think about him in that boxing, in the boxing movie, in the,
I know I never saw that movie.
I saw it.
Won't watch it.
Oh, it's good. But also in,
or what about, this would be really weird actually, but like now I'm thinking in lines of like goofy, like attractive actors that have gotten typecasted, but yeah, are actually really silly, like Channing Tatum or like a Hemsworth.
Oh yeah.
Although a Hemsworth's probably not, can't pull off the Polish thing, but
I'm thinking about,
well, it'd have to be Liam Hemsworth, but I don't think so.
Because Chris Hemsworth is like the silly one, I think.
Yeah.
He's too like blonde and blue-eyed and I don't know.
I just keep thinking about Tom Hardy in that Netflix show, in that Netflix the Irish one.
What's that show called? The Gangster Show.
Yes.
We have to put the subtitles on. Yeah, see, yes. Why the hell would you have us play a game where we can't even remember the fucking name of a TV show that, like...
We've played this game before. We did all right. I'm disappointed in us right now. Peaky Blinders.
Like, there weren't as many actors. Yeah.
Yeah. Peaky Blinders.
There weren't as many characters.
Paul Anderson.
Who's that?
He's from Peaky Blinders. He's the older brother.
Paul Anderson.
From Blue-Eyed Guy. Cillian Murphy.
Yeah.
He's the older brother.
He's skinny.
Tom Hardy's the best yeah, just you guys have given me.
I'm going to leave it at Tom Hardy. And then if we think of something before the next.
I think here's the thing with Tom Hardy is I know he plays a really tough guy in most things, but he's that, like, just his looks, he's a mixture of like really tough and goofy. Like he's kind of a goofy looking, and I don't mean that in a disrespectful way, Tom Hardy, don't come after me. He's obviously a very good looking guy, but he kind of is goofy looking too. He just plays a tough guy so much. I don't think people think of him that way.
Well, and I think that he plays goofy when he plays when he turns that superhero and he turns into, he's really not a superhero. He's like part villain, honestly. You know, what?
Bane?
No, not Bane. No.
Like, nothing silly Venom. About Bane. Venom. Bane is like
Venom when Venom. He's in Venom.
Oh, see, I never saw that.
And he's like a sweet kind of guy who just gets like overtaken by this alien thing. And he's pretty goofy in that, but
he is
a badass, he's
also,
you know.
He's also goofy in Peaky Blinders a bit.
Yeah.
Is he though? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's scary as hell, but also like kind of goofy. I feel like it's a good choice. It's probably not the best choice, but we might be here all night.
I think the frustrating thing is like there's one, you know, there's an actor out there that we're just like forgetting right now.
Yeah.
And if we said it, we'd be like, oh, that's the person. But it's like none of us can think of who that is right now.
Well, what's tough about this for me is, you know, you kind of, you're reading a book or you're listening to the audiobook and you picture often actors. You know, you picture a person. The accent that the audiobook person used did not seem like a Polish accent to me. It seemed much more like Mediterranean. And so Bogdan like, in my mind was Mediterranean.
Like, I don't know. I mean, I think Eastern it kind of sounds like an maybe, Eastern European accent. Yeah.
I mean, he's Polish, so.
Which is why, I don't know. I kind of think of
how about, what about Sacha Baron Cohen?
Yeah, I was just getting ready to say that.
Not big enough though. Like I feel like you gotta be big. Like I picture him as like a big dude because he's doing a lot of manual labor.
You don't think he could buff?
Not that he's big.
Tall and lanky, skinny. I guess.
Like I'm literally kind of you remember in Snatch, like the guy who plays Tyrone? Like that's the kind of thing I'm picturing. Like a big ass, like tough, like teddy bear dude. Cause that guy's goofy. Like he's not the brightest, but he's real big. Like that's what I'm picturing.
Oh, I could see that.
Like a Tyrone. Like, but a Polish Tyrone.
I mean, we could make the cast more diverse. That's all right.
So you want like Tom Hardy to like gain a ton of weight.
Tom Hardy can gain a ton of weight, though. Yep. We've seen him gain a ton of weight. That dude buffs up like easily. Look at Bane. Like, holy shit. He got like fucking huge for that.
Yeah, he did.
Well, he got buff for that.
He put on a lot of weight for that character.
Val Kilmer's been looking pretty thick these days.
Val Kilmer's too old. Val Kilmer.
Yeah, he is.
You would need, you kind of need like a fat Simon Pegg.
Oh. What about the other dude from like Zombieland?
Yeah.
Who is the other
and
dude from Hot Zombieland?
Fuzz and all those movies.
Oh my gosh. What's his name? What's his name? That's going to.
Oh my God. Who's the guy from that fucking like. Oh, who is that guy? Who's that?
Can't wait.
Do you know who I'm thinking of? The actor that's from like Just Do Nothing. What is that show? People Just Do Nothing. Just Do Nothing.
So Nick Frost is the guy from like the Simon Pegg movie. So look up Nick Frost and then Allie's looking up.
Is it Asim Chaudhry?
Chaudhry?
Yeah, Chaudhry. I think that is him.
Yeah.
That's his name.
Yeah.
I could see that.
Where's he?
Asim Chaudhry. Yeah, that's him. He was also him and Nick Frost are in a show together on Amazon Prime, by the way, where they're ghost hunters.
Oh, is.
Or no, I'm sorry. They're in different Amazon Prime shows.
Okay.
Sorry. He's in a show with the two women that used to host Great British Bake Off, and they're both assassins. And he's rival assassin.
What is his name on that show? Chabuti? Say his name.
Chabuti G.
Chabuti G.
Chabuti G.
Oh my God. I don't know. I don't know.
What about the other guy from that show? Hugo Chegwin.
Yeah, either of those people actually could be great, but we have to come to a consensus.
Hugo,
there's not even a picture for this guy.
Hugo Chegwin?
Yeah, there's no picture for him on IMDb.
Oh, I just googled it. He's on here. He's a little skinnier though, so if you want,
he's definitely lost weight. He'd have to put that back on, Hugo. If you want this part, bud, you're gonna have to put the weight back on.
Pull back up there.
Why is it so hard?
Yeah, it's weird that there's not a photo on him for IMDb. If you Google his name, there's plenty of photos. Hmm. He's the like secondary main character on People Just Do Nothing. He's the one with the kid or with the stepkid.
Is Kayvon Novak too good looking?
Who? Oh,
From What We Do in the Shadows?
Ooh. Actually, that's a good. Yeah.
Uh-oh. That might be it right there.
That's our guy.
Kayvon Novak?
Yeah.
Kayvon or Kayvon?
Yeah, totally.
That is absolutely him.
Yeah, that's him.
He just nailed it.
Yes.
Okay.
That took us like 45 minutes before we got there.
And it was so good. It was worth it. I feel like this is what real casting is like, where you're just like every person you could think of.
Okay. So we've cast the movie Thursday Night Murder Club. I'm going to hit
up Thursday Night Murder Club.
Thursday Murder Club. Sorry. I always want to put night on there for some reason. And they don't meet at night. They're in bed by then.
Yeah. They go to bed at 7.
Yeah.
Thursday Murder Club. We've got Helen Mirren playing Elizabeth. Celia Emery playing Joyce. Tony Shalhoub as Ibrahim. Jim Broadbent as Ron. And Kayvon Novak as Bogdan. I'll let Mr. Spielsberg with an extra S know
that we've already got. Send that email
for the casting, or at least give us credit or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, whatever it is. So we put that work in for him already. So yes.
You're perfect. Welcome. You're welcome.
It's all
Steven.
Done. I love it.
On a first name basis.
Mr. Spielsberg.
Like, I don't fuck with these guys. I can't even say my name right. All right. Well, that was fun. So I think that brings us to the end of tonight's episode. So thank you for listening. And as always, be sure to follow us on Instagram at Novels with Nightcaps. Subscribe to our podcast on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. Leave us a review to help us out. You can read along with us at Brunch with Books on Instagram. Our website is booksbrunch.com. If you have any suggestions for books you would like us to read, or you just want to drop us a line, you can DM us on Instagram or send us an email at info@novelswithnightcaps.com, or you can leave us a voice message at anchor.fm/novelswithnightcaps. All right, and I think that's it.
Okay.
Cheers.
Cheers, guys.
Good night.